I'm Tess Vigeland, and this is your Marketplace Money podcast for the weekend of October 12th, 2012. We are back for a full hour of listener questions. I'm here with Liz Weston, personal finance columnist at MSN Money and author of There Are No Dumb Questions About Money. There are some things you need to know about your credit cards, your debt management, and your personal credit, and we have got those answers for you. Welcome to the show, Liz.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
So, who needs to pay attention to their credit?
Well, not everyone. If you never plan to borrow money, rent an apartment, or buy insurance, then you don't need to care about your credit scores. Everybody else needs to pay attention.
All right, then what should they keep in mind when it comes to making some choices about their score?
Nothing in credit is permanent. You can improve a bad score, but you can also trash a good score.
All right, and what is one credit myth you would like to bust?
That carrying a credit card balance is somehow good for your scores.
Right.
It's not, and you need to knock it off.
All right, well, coming up on the broadcast, spending, saving, and everything in between, answers to your questions on Marketplace Money from 8 p.m. We're going to talk, I think, a lot about credit scores this week, which is, I mean, you quite literally wrote the book on credit scores, credit reports.
That I did.
And, you know, I tell you, in 6 years of hosting this program, I think the vast majority of the questions that we have gotten is about credit. People cannot figure out this system, and I think for good reason.
Yeah, it's a very, very complicated system. This was a formula that was created entirely for lenders. We were never supposed to know that it existed.
Wow.
And now we're trying to explain it to the people whose lives it affects. And sometimes it doesn't seem logical. Sometimes it doesn't seem fair.
I think most of the time it doesn't seem logical. Does it ever seem logical?
Well, it's kind of like taxes. It has its own internal logic. And then every once in a while it does something completely, you know, out there.
Yeah. So how did we get to the point where all of a sudden we did start paying attention to this if it was originally only for lenders? And now, I mean, you have people trying to manipulate their scores and, you know, trying to do this and that to try to get it to, you know, 850, which is ridiculous. But at what point did this become a responsibility of our own?
Well, actually, we started hearing about it probably in the mid-90s, because that's when Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the big mortgage buyers, said, okay, we're going to let lenders use FICO scores. And so now when you're sitting down with your mortgage broker or your mortgage professional, you're starting to hear about a FICO score. Well, what's a FICO score? And back then, again, you weren't allowed to know anything about it. You know, I don't even think you were supposed to see your score. Over the years, we've learned more and more about it. At the same time, it's become more prevalent. You know, now it's used by a lot of insurers mm-hmm. to determine premiums. Apartments are, you know, the landlords are looking at your credit scores. Employers look at credit information, not necessarily credit scores.
Right.
But it's out there and it's a big deal.
You know, I made fun just a moment ago of these people who and they write in and they're like, how do I get to 850, which is the maximum, you know, credit score for the FICO system? Where does this obsession come from? And should we care if we're at 850 or not?
No. It's the idea that you can achieve perfection. And
yeah.
I think that people who really do care about their scores tend toward that a little bit. We have that quirk in our personality. I need to be perfect.
They also have perfectly trained dogs
yes.
and children who say please and thank you with every sentence.
And fully funded 401ks
right,
and all that other
right.
stuff. But the reality is it doesn't do you any good to have an 850 score. So why bother?
Okay. Take that off your list of things to worry about,
yes.
please. Well, let's go ahead and hit the phones, and we have Catherine with us from Greenville, North Carolina. Hi there.
Hi there. How are you?
Very well, thank you. What do you do there?
I am in sales in the pharmaceutical industry.
All right. And let me ask you this. Are you obsessed with your credit score?
Not so much.
Oh, good.
Good.
I like to hear that. There are much bigger things to worry about as long as you're
right.
in a certain range, right, Liz?
Yes, exactly. If you're over 740, 760, you're doing fine.
Okay. Well, excellent. So what can we help you out with today, Catherine?
Well, when it was time for my daughter to decide on college and a career 9 years ago, she was very clear on her goal. She wanted to study to be a fashion designer and then live and work in New York City, which is what she is doing today. Graduating from a reputable art and design school was a must because it is so competitive, that
yeah,
industry.
Definitely.
But it also comes at a hefty price tag. So at the time, even though I didn't have the financial means to afford the school she chose, I agreed to take out Parent Plus loans in addition to her student loans.
Okay.
So fast forward 9 years. Today, I now owe $130,000 plus loans.
Yay.
At an interest rate of 6.5%, and I have about 20 more years to pay on it, so I'm kind of freaking out about it. My monthly payment is around $900, and if I only pay just $900, my total debt will end up costing about $260,000.
Yikes. So are you wondering if there's any way if you can refinance that or get rid of it? Which I don't think
well,
you probably
I have spoken to the Department of Education, and I can make additional payments. And that's to, you know, to pay it off early.
Right.
But I guess my question is I do have three other credit cards totaling around $9,000. I do have retirement saved, and I have a little bit in savings.
Okay.
So I'm just trying to figure out what is the smartest way to handle this debt load.
Yeah, Liz, this is another question that comes up over and over and over again, which is how do you decide which debts are best to pay off first and basically where to put your money, assuming you have enough to save for retirement, to have an emergency fund, to pay off your credit cards, to pay off the student loan? You know, how do you figure out where that balance should lie?
Well, actually, the first thing you should look at is where are your retirement savings? How much do you have saved for retirement, Catherine?
Together, my husband and I have saved about $300,000.
Okay, and how old are you?
54.
Okay, so you have maybe 10 or 12 years left that you're planning to work?
Oh, at least.
Okay.
Yes.
Retirement savings has to be a top priority. So that's just a given.
Okay.
And everything else has to fit in around that. Typically, credit card debt needs to be the first to go. Now, the good thing is that this family relied on federal student loans. Mm-hmm. I didn't hear that you got any private loans. Is that correct?
No, my daughter has a private loan, but it's manageable.
Okay. Well, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they were able to get this interest rate around 6%.
Yeah. And actually, federal student loans are so much better than private loans. They have fixed rates. They have a lot of consumer protections and payment options. They do offer the possibility of forgiveness. Even Parental Plus loans have that possibility. I just don't think, given what I'm assuming your income is as a pharmaceutical salesperson, that you mm-hmm. really would qualify for much help in terms of forgiveness.
Probably not going to qualify
right.
for like a hardship exception. Or
yeah, hardship
like
exception or the fact you wouldn't, you know, if you did an income contingent,
right.
your payment might even go
right.
up. So that's
right.
probably not an option here. So, you know, really you need to focus on that credit card debt. Focus on saving enough for retirement and mm-hmm. just keep plugging away at those student loans because you can't get rid of these. We've talked about that before.
Yep.
This is not something you can erase. This is not something you can get rid of in bankruptcy court. Once you make that commitment to this debt, you're stuck with it. And I hope, Catherine, if other parents are listening right now, they pay attention because way too often parents, you know, drain all their resources trying to pay for a dream school for their children. And the reality mm-hmm. is they simply can't afford it. And they should think about, am I willing to pay $1,000 a month for 30 years?
Yep.
Absolutely.
Does that help you out?
Yeah, it really does.
All right. Thanks so much for the call, Catherine.
Thank you so much.
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
And we're back with more of your calls. Elaine is with us from Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hi there.
Hi there.
What do you do there in the Twin Cities?
I have a couple jobs, actually. I'm a stage actress and have been for a number of years.
Ooh.
And then to pay the mortgage, I also work as a program coordinator for a library support organization.
I have to know what the latest production is that you were on stage for.
I was in a production of three short plays called Outside Providence.
Oh. Well, how can we help you out today? What's your question for Liz?
Well, my question is a little convoluted. I got married a little over a year ago, and prior to getting married, I had a house that I'd lived in since 2005,
mm-hmm.
and the house values, of course, then tanked.
Uh-oh.
And,
so are you
right,
underwater?
Very, very much so.
Okay. And you owe more on your mortgage than the home is worth.
Exactly. I owe about $117,000 on the mortgage, and the latest, it's too depressing to even look at, but it's somewhere under $70,000
is
the worth of the house.
Okay.
And my husband only had an apartment and had a lot in savings, and we decided to buy another house that would be our, you know, our home. And it's entirely under his name, and we now have this house, have moved into it. And I talked to several different realtors at the time, and it would be much, much too far under the mortgage if they were to try to sell it. So we rent it.
So you're renting out your former home. All right. So what's your question?
The question is that we are not able to get enough in rent to cover the mortgage, and the mortgage is going up.
What do you mean the mortgage is going up? Did you have an adjustable rate?
No. It is a fixed rate, but with assessments and things like that, they're doing improvements in the neighborhood,
the
streets.
Okay.
And so we're looking at maybe a $200 to $300 drain each month.
Yikes. So what kinds of options are you considering at this point?
I'm curious about a short sale. I'm curious if it's better to continue with the renting and those uncertainties and the sort of the slow drain, or if it's even possible to try to just get rid of the house.
Yeah, well, without, pretending to be real estate agents, who are really the only people who could tell you whether you would be able to do a short sale, let's talk through the pros and cons of keeping up with this house where they're not even getting enough rental income to pay the increasing mortgage versus trying to go for a short sale, which, as we know, can give you a real hit on your credit score.
Well, I would look at the total picture first. Look at what you're getting as a tax break with depreciation, because sometimes that offsets the fact that you're a little bit, not getting quite enough cash flow. But I suspect it's still going to be a drain on your finances. With a short sale, it's going to trash your credit as much as a foreclosure. What it does do for you is that you're in the penalty box with mortgage lenders for a shorter period of time. Maybe two years instead of 5 to 7. Now, the good news is that if your husband isn't on the mortgage, it doesn't affect him. You guys have another house at this point. So it's not going to be a crisis that you won't be able to buy another house because you've got one. That's what you need to look at. Short sale can take a while, but they are going faster than they used to. Seems like the banks have finally caught on to the fact that, this is a better result for them and for everybody than just letting it go into foreclosure.
But it will, from what we've heard, at least anecdotally with listeners who've written in and, pretty much every newspaper story out there, is that it will take you a long time.
Yeah.
The bank does not make it easy.
Yeah.
They may ultimately do it for you, but you have to be prepared for a long, drawn-out process.
And the best thing you can do is find a real estate agent who's done a ton of these.
Right.
Because he or she is going to know the banks, know their procedures, help you get it through the process, which is, as Tess said, not very easy.
So my biggest question about this was whether, our current house would somehow be affected or my husband's credit would also tank.
Well, there is one thing you have to keep in mind. You want to look at that short sale agreement because I've been hearing about more lenders putting wording in that essentially keeps you on the hook for what should be forgiven debt.
But doesn't that depend on what state you live in?
That's part of it as well. So, and I don't know the laws for Minnesota or how that might
shake
out.
You need to look up, just go and Google recourse versus non-recourse mortgages.
Okay.
And you should be able to find out whether the bank can come after you for the difference between what your house sells for and what you owe it on it.
And it also might be a good idea just to have a lawyer look at it.
All right. Well, thanks so much for the call, Elaine, and best of luck to you.
Thank you for taking it.
Ben is with us from Milwaukee. Hi there.
Hi, how's it going?
Very well, thank you. How are things there in Milwaukee?
Beautiful. Actually.
Beautiful, yeah.
Surprise. Yep. No snow yet, so I'm happy.
I would hope not in early October.
You never know. You never know.
I suppose that's true. So what's your question for Liz today?
Well, I have a question about credit card debt, actually.
Excellent. Well, you've got the woman who literally wrote the book.
Excellent. Liz, you are my girl.
All right.
There we go.
How can I help you, Ben?
Well, I've accrued quite a bit of credit card debt because I put school on my one credit card.
Wow.
And then, I know. It was. I regret it every day since.
When you say quite a bit, can you define that for us?
Roughly $30,000.
Okay. Ouch.
I know.
Why did you do a credit card versus a student loan?
At the time, it was just the easiest thing. At that point, I guess, is the best way I can explain it. It was a foolish error, but it was, at the time, it was, I need to pay this, I need to pay it now.
Yeah, so my guess is that you have a pretty high interest rate on that then.
It's about 16%.
Ouch.
Yikes. Yeah.
Okay, so how many cards are you using for this?
One of them holds the 16%, and that's at about 19,000, and then roughly three are somewhere between 9% and 12% for the remaining.
All right. So the real tough thing about this, Liz, is first of all that these interest rates are
far higher than what a federal student loan would have been.
Yes.
And second of all, you don't have a payment plan to work with.
Yeah.
You know, the credit cards are not forgiving in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, exactly. And the federal student loans, as we talked about, come with a lot of payment options.
Right.
Credit card companies not as interested. The one thing you do have with credit cards is you can go bankrupt and get it wiped out, but
right.
It doesn't sound like that's something that you want to consider, Ben, or is it?
No, ideally, I do not want to.
Okay.
I got myself in this mess. I want to get myself out.
Good okay. for you.
What's your income? What's your annual income?
About $40,000.
Okay. It's a lot of debt,
yep,
given that income level. Normally, I say if your credit card and medical bills combined are half or more of your income, you need to be talking to a legitimate credit counselor, but you also need to be talking to a bankruptcy attorney. Because I think a lot of people want to pay off their debt. I think the vast majority of people who do wind up in bankruptcy court try to pay off their debt,
yep,
and they wind up doing foolish things like draining their retirement, draining their home equity, in an attempt
okay.
to pay bills that cannot be paid. So the first thing that you need to do is make an appointment with a legitimate credit counselor. They can let you know if there's a plan that you can pay off this debt over 5 years or so. But also talk to a bankruptcy attorney, because he or she can look at your entire situation and let you know if you qualify, you know, for Chapter 7 to get it erased. You need to know all your options before you decide, is the short version.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you owe $30,000 and your annual income is $40,000, I just, you know, it's hard to imagine a way that you can live.
Unfortunately, yeah. And at best, it would take you 10 or more years.
Right.
And the bankruptcy system only requires you, even in cases where you have to pay off your debt, you know, a payment plan of 5 years, and then the rest is forgiven. So that's generally the line. If it would take you more than 5 years to pay off this debt, maybe you should be looking at other options. And obviously, this
yeah.
is not something you wanted. This is not something that you planned on doing. But
yeah.
this is the outcome. And you need to be realistic, because way too many people
yeah.
deny the obvious until it's too late.
But Liz, let me address something. You know, I mean, he's saying here that he wants to pay off this debt. He,
yes.
You know, he feels like he has a responsibility, and he does.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there will be listeners who will write in and say that, you know, again, you got yourself into this trouble. You should have to pay it off, no matter, you know, how difficult that is for you. But then I guess the question is, well, then why do you have bankruptcy court at all?
Exactly. And you have to look at the fact that bankruptcy is actually essential to the capitalist system.
Yep.
If we didn't have a way to erase debts, who would take a chance? Who
exactly.
would open a business? Who would do any of these things? So businesses take advantage of bankruptcy court to reorganize their finances. Individuals have that capacity too. And again, with all my experience with bankruptcy, I haven't seen too many people who are delightedly skipping into
right.
bankruptcy court.
Right.
Typically, it's after they've tried everything else and often done a lot of foolish things before they finally realize they can't get out of this hole. So that's why I want Ben to go talk to somebody now before things really get scary.
All right, Ben?
Quick question. Is there a website that has good places to start looking for, like, credit counseling and
yes.
things like that?
Thank you for asking that question. I should have followed up with that. The National Foundation for Credit Counseling, NFCC.org. That's the oldest organization. They have credit counseling agencies all over the place. I'm sure they've got them in Milwaukee. You can make an appointment, sit down, go over your finances. Now, remember, this is an organization that's trying to keep you out of bankruptcy court.
Right.
And they get payments from the credit card companies and other lenders to offer their services. So keep that in mind. That's why I say make an appointment, talk about the possibilities, but also go talk to a bankruptcy attorney, because you'll get the other side of the story.
Okay,
Ben. Thanks. And any final words for our listeners about the wisdom of putting your education on a credit card?
It's not a good idea.
All right. Public service announcement ended. Thanks so much for the call, Ben, and good luck.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. All right, we have some emails come in, so let me go with one from Katie in Alexandria, Minnesota, who says she does a lot of shopping at Target,
yes.
And she wants to know if there are any particular financial or credit risks that she needs to be aware of if she opens a Target debit card.
Yeah, this is interesting. It's not issued by the bank necessarily. It's tied to your bank account, though.
Yeah, I didn't realize that a store could issue a debit card.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting thing.
Hmm.
What you need to know, the most important thing you need to know, is banks are required to ask you if you want to sign up for overdraft protection now. And a lot of people simply opted out of that, because
right.
what happened was people were getting, you know, purchases approved when they weren't expecting it and getting hit with fees. With this particular card, they don't have to ask you in advance.
Really?
And people find out too late that, you know, an over limit purchase has been approved, and then they get hit with fees. So anytime you're looking at a debit card, credit card, read those awful mouse print forms and find out what the fees are and what the penalties could be if you misbehave somehow with this card.
You know, I think a lot of people just question the wisdom of using any sort of store-issued credit card. I mean, pretty much any department store that you go into, they're going to offer it to you.
Yeah.
Just about every clothing store, grocery stores even, are offering cards these days. And, I guess I understand the allure of things like cash back and things like that. But I don't know. Is there a rule of thumb for whether these are wise or not?
Well, you have to. Obviously, you don't want to carry a balance on any of these cards because the interest rates tend to be outrageous. Some of the cards are actually MasterCard Visa branded, so you can use them anywhere. I would go with that rather than one that was just for a single chain because typically you get the same benefits from it. And also, if you shop at a single chain a lot, it can make some sense to have one of those cards because you do get discounts and coupons going forward. But in general, you're better off with a more general Visa, MasterCard, American Express, Discover card than you are tying yourself to one issued by a retailer.
Okay. So there you go, Katie. Hope that helps out. Lois in Colchester, Vermont is wondering whether it's wise to transfer existing credit card balances to a 0% credit card offer. These offers come all the time,
don't
they?
If you have good credit, they do.
Okay, well, yes. I have good credit, so I get these offers all the time. And, it certainly sounds like it would be wise. I mean, why wouldn't you transfer from, any high-interest credit card? But I also know that there are, A, fees involved in those balance transfers, and, B, it doesn't mean that debt is wiped out. You still have to pay it.
Yeah. Unfortunately, a lot of people use these 0% offers just to keep carrying the balances and bounce them around.
And she does. She says she has $20,000 in credit card debt. One of those cards at 15%, the other at 24%.
Well, again, I would say to Lois what I said to Ben, look at your income. Look at that debt in relation to your income. See if there's any chance that you can pay this off in a few years. Because if there isn't, even with the 0% offer, you need to be looking at alternatives. You need to be looking at credit counseling, possibly. Yep. You need to talk to a bankruptcy attorney. I mean, $20,000 is a lot of debt.
It is.
It's not something that you came to overnight, so you're not going to get rid of it overnight. 0% offers can help when you have a plan to pay off the debt and you have the resources to do so. Otherwise, you're just shifting around the debt and you may wind up in a much worse place down the road.
Yeah, well, and she points out that she's 58, her husband is 66, and she says they have some retirement but not much saved.
Ooh.
Yeah, so that adds to the calculus as well.
Yeah, exactly, because the typical Social Security check is around $1,000. And you can go to Social Security now and see what you're going to get. But, a lot of people cannot live on $12,000 a year or, slightly more. So you have to think about what's your priority. And once again, especially at this stage in life, they should be saving a ton for their retirement.
And it's interesting. She also notes that she got this credit card debt because she opened a business. And so here we have someone who opened a business with a credit card. We have someone who put their college education on a credit card. These are not what you want to make purchases on your credit card with, right?
No. I mean, credit cards can be the most convenient source of funds for a lot of people, but they come with so many risks. And the biggest is those variable interest rates that can just shoot up and really hurt you. So, if you have a successful business, if you need a little starting money, SBA is a great source to go to finding funds. A few bucks on a credit card is not a huge deal, but trying to fund your whole business on your credit cards is really, really dangerous.
Okay. Thanks so much for writing in.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to FreakonomicsRadio.com.
Let's go to the phones again, and PJ is with us from Warren, Oregon. Hi there.
Hi.
A fellow Oregonian.
Oh, how nice.
Yay. And you've got two Pacific Northwesters here.
Yep.
Yeah.
Liz is from Washington.
Still have the moss on my back.
Yeah. And you're allergic to the sun, right?
Yes, exactly.
Even though we live here in Southern California. What do you do there in Oregon?
Well, I'm retired.
Ta-da! Oh, congratulations. How long have you been retired?
Gosh, almost 4 years.
Oh, what's nice. It like? Because Liz and I aren't going to be there for a while.
Well, you know, if you're really used to structure and having to be somewhere at a certain time, it sure takes a while to get used to.
I bet.
Yeah.
So you were used to going into an office then?
Yeah, I was in a healthcare administrator, and I had 12 offices, so I had to be a lot of places.
Oh, my goodness. And are you enjoying your retirement then?
Yeah, I'd say on the whole, yeah.
Well, good for you. And you must have been in a financial position where you could do so. So, bravo.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, well, you know, I picked 2008 as the year to retire. Can you imagine?
Oh, jeez.
Scary.
Yeah.
What did it do to you? What did it do to your finances?
Oh, it just decimated my 401k.
Yeah, but you went ahead and retired anyway?
Yeah. Well, yeah. It was a little bit before the huge fall. And I kind of panicked and wasn't as smart with my money as my husband told me to be. So,
did you sell at the bottom?
Well, I when it just looked horrific, I moved everything just to a money market account and let it sit. And of course, by now, it would have really crept back up. So.
Right. Well, I guess all we can say to that is that you were certainly not alone in any way, shape, or form. You know, and it is human nature, as all the studies have shown us, to, you know, buy high and sell low, which is exactly the opposite of what you should do. But water under the bridge at this point for you. So what is the question that we can help you out with, given that you have already retired?
Well, my husband will be retiring, we hope, in about 3 years. We live in a house on a pretty sizable piece of property, and we're exhausted.
Yes. Land takes a lot of effort to keep up
with. Yeah. So we're thinking, you know, shortly after he does retire, we'd like to sell and move into something a little more manageable and smaller. And our question is, should we pay for a house just outright or carry a mortgage in retirement?
So it sounds like essentially what you're saying is you think that you'll be able to sell your home and then you would have a chunk of money where you could potentially buy another home, and you're wanting to know if that's the wise move.
Yes.
Yeah.
Our CPA was incredulous that we even thought of paying for a house. He said, no, don't do that.
Why?
He was telling us you want to put it somewhere safe, like utilities use what
he was suggesting that you would rent?
No, he's suggesting that we...
Oh, that you get a mortgage.
Mm-hmm, and that we use this magical investment money to pay the mortgage.
Okay.
Wow. Okay. Well, Liz, so here we have a question of essentially what to do with a potential chunk of money that they will be coming into. Do we want to pay off the house, where that then becomes your sole investment, or do we want to get a mortgage and use the rest of the money for other investments?
Well, it's going to depend on how big a chunk this is, frankly, and how well suited they are for retirement. For a lot of people, it's really, really nice to be debt-free in retirement. And the advantage of that is, you know, not only do you not have to face that monthly bill, you're also not draining your retirement funds to pay for it.
Right.
So I was expecting the CPA to say, you want to keep a mortgage for the tax benefits, but
right.
That's kind of silly. But what he's saying, that, you know, you may want to have it in investments and be more diversified, actually makes sense. So when you sell your property, that the sum that you expect to get, how will that compare with your other investments? Would it be about the same? Would it be a bigger chunk? Would it be a smaller chunk?
It'd be smaller.
Okay. All right. If it were me, I probably would pay cash for the house.
Yeah,
I don't think there's a huge... I mean, I know that rates are incredibly cheap right now. You can get a 15-year loan for under 3%, which is just crazy. And we may all regret this if we pay off our loans before then, because that's incredibly cheap money. But this is something where, you know, a lot of people sleep better at night without that mortgage. I would take it to a fee-only planner. I would put out in front of him or her and say, okay, what do you recommend? Because a fee-only planner is not going to have a dog in the fight. They're not going to be making any more money if you invest with them or not. And I think you can get some objective advice looking at your whole situation about whether you should keep that money invested or if you should invest it in paying off a mortgage.
Yeah, that makes me feel better. We had actually reached that decision on our own, and it's great to hear you say that.
Yeah, well, you know, and to me, you know, basically what your CPA is telling you is that you could do better in the market mm-hmm. with your investments than you would in paying for your house. Mm-hmm. And I don't think anybody knows what the market is going to do. You know, even if you are completely, utterly diversified, you're still taking a lot of risk.
That's the worry for us.
And you have to think about it. You know, it's something that you then have to think about.
But, exactly. Yeah. But you own the house, and it seems it would be a tremendous feeling of safety.
Yeah. But I've also talked to people who just don't have enough saved for retirement, and they're really focused on paying off that mortgage when they really shouldn't be. They should be shoveling as much money into investments as they can. And they have the opposite situation where they have, you know, a very large mortgage and not much savings. Looks like you've got the other way around. So it makes sense for you to be, you know, thinking about having a mortgage-free life. But again, take it to a CFP who's fee-only, who can look at your whole situation and give you individual advice. Because this is a big decision. This is
Absolutely.
A decision that will affect the rest of your retirement. Get a Great. Second opinion for somebody who can look at your individual situation.
Super. Will do.
Does All that right. help you out?
Thank you.
So, PJ, are you going to stay in Oregon?
Oh, gosh. You know, I'm embarrassed to say this as a native Oregonian, but the dismal gray has finally gotten to us.
We understand.
We Thanks. Do. We do. There is a reason Liz and I now live in Southern California.
Yes.
So you can join us down here. There
okay.
you go.
Thanks,
All right.
Lady.
Thanks so much for the call.
Uh-huh. Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, as we've mentioned, Liz's new book is called There Are No Dumb Questions About Money, and that's why we are taking your questions, because they're all really smart. And let's start actually with an email from Denise in Sugar Land, Texas. And she wanted to know, can it be a good idea to take out a low interest loan against your car to use the money for other things? Now, first of all, I didn't even know that you could do this. That sounds like a home equity loan, but it's your car, not your house.
Yeah, there's two kinds of loans that you can do with a car. One is a title loan, which tends to be very, very expensive and a really bad idea. But actually, some credit unions and other banks also offer you loans against the value of your car.
Really?
Yeah.
So you pay off your car, and then what? You figure out what Kelley Blue Book says it's worth, and you can get a loan against that?
Essentially, they won't give you the loan for the entire value, obviously, because they have to have a margin. And this is an asset that depreciates on top of it. But I could see some situations where it would make sense if you had extremely toxic debt. If you had high interest rate credit card debt, mm-hmm. that might be one way to pay it off. If you were going to a payday loan, this would certainly be a better option. But for a lot of people, they should just hang on to whatever equity they've got.
Yeah.
You know, we learned that with the mortgage crisis, not a good idea to drain your equity.
You don't take on debt just to take on debt.
Yeah.
Okay, so that would be a no.
We
don't
say.
Think this is probably a great idea. I mean, obviously, we don't have all the details, but particularly when she says she doesn't necessarily need the money.
Yeah. That's
don't do it.
Yeah. Don't walk through that door. That's not a good idea.
Exactly. All right, let's go to the phones. And Leslie is with us from Vegas, baby Vegas. Hello there.
Hello.
What do you do there?
I work in IT.
You do?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So do you work in IT as part of the industry there? Or?
Yes, I work for a large gaming company.
Uh-huh. Okay. So you make sure all the computers are still working.
I try.
Well, what can we do for you today?
I had some questions about loans.
Okay. What kind of loans?
Well, I'm just starting to go back to school.
Oh, what are you going back to school for?
My bachelor's in IT.
Good for you.
Thanks. And
well, why are you laughing?
Because I am 26.
That doesn't matter. Hey, you're going back to school. Good for you.
So I'm knocking on wood here.
Yeah.
I have a medical condition. I initially was in the hospital in 2005, and I accrued a huge debt because I had no health insurance at the time.
Oh, boy. What is your overall debt that you owe right now?
I probably owe about $8,000 in medical debt.
Okay.
And then the $5,000 a year that I pay for medications, hospital visits, doctor's visits, procedures, yada, yada.
That's a lot of out-of-pocket.
It is.
Do you just have big co-pays? I mean, why is there such exposure there?
Yeah, I do have big co-pays. Every specialist visit that I go see is about $55.
Okay.
And then I have one medication alone. I normally take about three. One medication alone costs me about $500 every 3 months.
Aye, aye, aye.
Okay.
All right. And what about other debt outside of your medical debt?
Outside of medical debt, I don't have a whole lot.
Okay.
I have $2,000 left on my car, which will be paid within 6 months.
Okay.
and I'm not worried about that. That's not hurting my credit at all, but I know the medical debt is.
Yeah. Credit cards?
Credit cards, I have two, but they have very, very low limits.
Okay.
So $500 is my max.
So it sounds like I'm guessing that your question here is whether you should be taking on student loans with all this medical debt that you have.
Exactly. Yeah. The problem that I have with medical debt mostly is here in Nevada, when you get a hospital bill, it's not just one bill. You get a bill from the hospital, a bill from the doctor, a bill from the anesthesiologist.
Yep.
You get a bill from everything.
Yep.
So even paying the minimums on each one of those bills, they won't accept less than like $20 a month. Well, $20 a month times 6, 7, 8, that is what's hurting me the most right now. What I'm running into, I guess, is I'm going back to school to help my income.
Right.
I need to be making more income in order to be paying off all my medical debt. I can't really grow much farther than I am now without a degree.
Yeah. And how much do you make a year?
Oh, about $30,000.
Ouch.
Yeah, okay. $32,000.
Right. And after you get your IT degree, what do you expect to make?
I'm hoping to make between 60 and 80.
Okay. All right, which would make all this more manageable.
Yeah, absolutely. But it really is a catch-22. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know,
exactly.
What do you do in the meantime, you know, if to try to get an education so you can pay off your bills, but your bills keep you from being able to buy yourself an education?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was really, really fortunate. My company has a reimbursement program, which will cover about a quarter to a half of my degree.
Okay.
Great. Okay. That was one of my questions, is if you had access to that kind of a benefit. How are you paying for the rest of it?
Out of pocket. Anything I can possibly save up. I have basically a zero savings account. Everything is going towards my education at this point.
How much does it cost you a year, the education?
Let's see. It's costing me about $1,500 before books.
A year or a semester?
That's about one full semester.
Okay. All right. Well, I tell you what, federal student loan would cover those costs, give you a little bit more breathing room.
Mm-hmm.
It has fixed interest rates.
Now, I did fill out the FAFSA. But they're pretty much stating that 100% of the cost should be paid by me or family.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Why? Why is that, Liz?
Well, the cost of schooling isn't that great. So typically it's based on your income. And even though her income is not high, the cost of the education is pretty low. So,
but don't they take into account all these bills she has?
Not necessarily.
No?
Not necessarily.
Wow.
And this is something the parents need to think about, too, when they're thinking about their own kids, is that it's very heavily weighted towards income. And even if your income is not spectacular, you know, you're not going to get as much help as you think.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I would not take federal student loans to pay that other debt because you are a woman with a chronic health condition.
Mm-hmm.
You are at greater risk for bankruptcy than most people.
Okay.
You know, something could happen. You lose a job. You face these bills. You can't pay insurance. You wind up in bankruptcy court. Your federal student loans will not be dischargeable, but your other debt could be.
Mm-hmm.
So don't pile on extra debt that's not education related.
Okay.
This is a case where it does make a lot of sense to invest in your education because you could really boost your income, maybe even get better insurance that would cover more.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I also want to suggest there's a book out there called The Medical Bill Survival Guide. You can find it on Amazon. I would get that book and take a look at see if you're doing everything you possibly can to get the bills down, to negotiate them as low as they can go.
Okay.
And to deal with it going forward. Obviously, this is something you're going to deal with for the rest of your life. So it pays to have some ninja skills when dealing with medical providers because a lot of them won't offer help, but
right.
they have it available. So, you know, you have to know how to negotiate these things.
Well, Leslie, no easy answers here.
Yeah.
You know, you are in a tough spot, but I think basically what Liz and I are looking at is that taking on more student debt is not really ideal for you right now.
Well, I actually come to it from a different point of view. I think it's worth doing.
Oh,
because,
you do?
Yeah, because it's not a huge amount of money that she's looking at to borrow.
Yeah.
It'll help her get that degree to get her income up. So right now she's so strapped that she's got this debt that she can't pay. She's living paycheck to paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
I think it could help her get ahead, give her a little breathing room. What I was saying, though, is don't use that federal student loan for any other debt.
Anything
got
except
it.
For
okay.
students.
Okay. So does that help you out?
That does. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks so much for the call, Leslie.
Thank
Good luck.
Thank you.
Boy, tough situation there,
yeah,
Liz.
That's
really, I mean, that trade-off is so hard for people to figure out.
Yeah.
You know, you
got
to have the money to buy school, and unless you have school, you're not going to get more money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really tough one. All right, let's go back to the mailbag. And Eva in Providence, Rhode Island, is wondering if moving or applying for jobs can damage your credit score. She says she had a lot of temp positions earlier this year. She doesn't have any debt. That's a bonus.
Yes, that helps.
She did a free credit report in September of last year, and she says when she checked again in April of this year, her credit had dropped 72 points. Oh, geez. Went from 839 to 767. Why are we worrying about this?
Well, it depends on which score she was looking at. She's obviously not looking at a FICO, okay, because she went somewhere for a free credit report.
Oh, right.
They offered her a credit score. That's not going to be a FICO.
Right.
Even if she paid for it, still not going to be a FICO. The credit scoring system that most lenders use is the FICO. Mm-hmm. You have to pay for that.
Yes.
You know, it's not going to come free.
And let's say that again, because this is a question that comes in quite often. People say, you said that I could get a free credit score. No, actually, we never have said that. You can get free credit reports.
Yes.
But your credit score from Fair Isaac is a whole different story. Congress has not told them that they have to give you that for free.
Exactly. And you want to make sure that you're going to the right place to get the credit report in the first place. That's annualcreditreport.com.
Right.
A lot of lookalike sites pretending to be the federal site. There's only one. That's where you need to go. So,
okay, so all these jobs that she's had, does that affect her credit score?
No, that is not a factor in your credit score. Your income, where you live, your job, none of that is part of your credit score, which is the three-digit number that's used as a sort of snapshot of your credit worthiness. Things that do matter, how you pay your credit accounts, how many credit accounts you've had, how long you've had those credit accounts. See, the word credit keeps coming up.
Right, right.
Credit scores have to do with credit. Those other factors will not affect you unless you move and forget to pay a bill.
Okay, so check that out. And Jennifer wrote in from Chicago. She's 28 years old. Her parents put her on their credit cards at a young age. And she's wondering now if that long history is helping or hurting her. She has no student loans, no debt, owns her car, rents her apartment, is saving money for a down payment on a house. Wow. I don't know that she should have any problems at all.
No, she's doing great. You know, credit scoring is one area where age is wonderful. The older you are,
right,
the better it is. And that's the only reason, by the way, my husband has a higher credit score than I do. I just want to point that out.
Just to make that crystal clear.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. So irritating. So, you know, that's actually helping her. I might suggest that she do get a credit card in her own name, maybe two, over time, because that will help. The only thing that could damage her is if her parents stopped paying that credit card that she's an authorized user on. Otherwise, it should be helping her.
And if her parents, for whatever reason, ran into trouble with their own credit, would that affect her score?
It could. The first thing she should do is ask them to take her off, if that's a possibility, you know, if they're having any problems. She should bring it up with them just to let them know that, you know, she wants a heads up if they're going to be defaulting.
Is there any reason to stay on their credit card now that she's a 28-year-old adult?
If she doesn't have a lot of other credit lines open and showing on her credit reports, it can still help her.
Okay.
So that's why I was suggesting get a couple in her own name, and then she can be taken off the parents without huge effect on her score.
Okay. Good question, Jennifer. Thanks for writing in. This is Marketplace Money from APM. All right, and let's go to our final caller. It's Dan in Claremont, California. Hi there.
Hello.
So Claremont, this is where we have a lot of fabulous schools. Are you a student?
I'm actually a professor at one of the schools here.
What do you teach there?
History of art.
Wow.
Particularly modern art. Yeah, it's a good gig. I'm quite happy for it.
I bet. Well, good for you. So what's your question for us today?
Well, in my life up until this point, I've looked at debt as something I should keep extraordinarily minimal. And I've paid off my credit cards on a monthly basis and lived within my means to the point of having no debt whatsoever.
Okay, we're done here.
However, I recently graduated with a PhD.
Ah,
so, you know, in my last year, I had to take out a bit of loans.
Got it.
Then I ran up just a bit of credit card debt, and I bought my first car, a new car with financing. And all of this seemed very manageable, and I thought that perhaps within my first year of this car loan, I could even pay it off.
Mm-hmm.
But then the financing person I spoke with suggested that having a loan term of at least 2 years, and perhaps even longer, would be beneficial to my credit, especially when it comes time to buying a house or something like that.
I love all these people who lend money and say that this is going to be good for your financial future.
I know. I'm suspicious of them, too, by
nature.
Yeah,
good. As well you should be.
My question is, are there types of debt that I should cultivate and keep open with some sort of balance for longer than a year in order to develop more credit for further on down the line?
Yeah, but Liz, another question that we get a lot from people who are wondering if they actually should take on debt to help their credit scores.
Typically, the answer is no. I mean, if you have an active credit card that you're using, you don't need to carry a balance on that to help your credit. You have student loans. That's an installment loan. That's helping your credit.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't need to stretch out any kind of loan to improve your credit. Even after you close it, it's still going to be on your credit file for a while and contributing to your score. So it's a real misnomer that you have to be in debt to have good credit scores.
Yes.
And I hope we can just fight back that myth, because it's not true. It is true if you're trying to improve really bad scores that sometimes it can help to go out and get an installment loan to add to the mix, as well as a credit card that you don't carry debt on. But in this case, there's really no reason to continue paying interest that you don't have to. My question, though, is first, what's the interest rate on this car loan?
It's 4.7%. Actually, you know, it might even be 3.7.
Oh.
It shows you how I handle my
amazing
finances. At any rate, I have on a reliable source that it was a pretty good rate, given the fact that I've never owned a car before.
Okay. And are you saving for retirement?
In a very general sense, my current job puts away some money for me.
Okay. And is,
but I don't consider this probably won't be the retirement plan that I finish out my career with.
Okay. So this is probably not the school that you're going to stay with very long?
Yeah, that's probably the case.
Okay. And how are you doing as far as emergency funds?
You know, I could probably stand to have a bit more padding. You know, in my checking account, I probably have a couple thousand dollars now. I generally like to have a bit more than that, but I've been prioritizing paying down the debt that I have.
Okay. I'm just thinking early in a career, there tends to be a lot of movement, dislocation. There might be gaps between jobs. My personal preference would be that you'd concentrate on building up that emergency fund a little bit.
All right.
This interest rate on the loan is, you know, not that great. It's not tax deductible, so it's, you know, not one that you should carry forever. But
right,
I think I would prioritize that. And also looking at your retirement options, maybe opening up a Roth IRA, putting a little bit money in there. Because the nice thing about a Roth IRA is you can pull out your contributions at any time if you need to. I wouldn't do that, but that's a lot of flexibility. And that probably will help you in your current situation more than, you know, paying off this rather cheap loan.
Okay, very good. So to sum up, would that then mean that in any given month, rather than paying off a couple hundred extra dollars of the principal on the car loan, I should perhaps put that into a savings account?
I would do that. That would be my preference, just to give you some more financial flexibility, because paying down the auto loan doesn't really help you because it doesn't clear up a line of credit that you
right
could access.
Especially with such a low interest rate.
Yeah, yeah. The credit card debt, though, has to go.
Yep.
Prioritize that.
Yeah, well, I'll take care of that on the quick then and build up a bit more padding in the bank account.
There you go.
Sounds good.
Thank you very much for your advice.
Thanks for the call, Dan.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Yeah, you know, can we say this again? Can we reiterate 2 points today, which is number one, don't just take on debt to improve your credit score.
Yes.
Don't
please
do that. And second of all, you cannot get a free credit score. You, at least the FICO score, which most lenders use, you cannot get that for free. You can get your credit reports for free, as mandated by Congress, but you cannot get the score. And that is Marketplace Money for this week. Liz, we are so glad you could join us.
Glad to be here.
And that was Liz Weston, personal finance columnist at MSN Money and author of There Are No Dumb Questions About Money. I believe we have proved that today.
Absolutely.
Check us out online at marketplace.org. You can also find us on Twitter and Facebook. Next week, sometimes a haircut can make all the difference.
It's a strange thing, you know, to be in a manly environment, a manly place, and to see guys get emotional. They're saying, you know, thank you so much. You don't realize what you just did for me.
One barbershop is helping the jobless. Marketplace Money is produced by Patty Hirsch with Devin Maverick Robbins, Joel Patterson, and Bridget Bodner. Our theme was composed by Mark Governor. The executive producer of the program is Deborah Clark. The Marketplace general manager is J.J. Yore. I'm Tess Vigeland. We'll see you next week.
There's a lot packed into an hour of Marketplace Money. Check it out again on our website at marketplace.org or take the show with you. Download the show by clicking on the subscribe to podcast link and never miss an episode again.
This is APM.